This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hi, and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name is Louise and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting.
Hi, my name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Robert. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model, and the victim is as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. If you are an alcoholic, you're at the beginning of a long road that usually ends in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic is often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. And yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. And this is what makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Okay, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9, and we're just about to interview an AA member who's going to share their experience with alcoholism. So let's meet our guest. Would our guests like to introduce themselves?
Yeah, hi, my name's Robert and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Robert, and welcome to the show. So tell us, how long have you been sober?
I haven't had a drink for just over 11 years now.
Wonderful, wonderful. And how old are you?
55.
Brilliant. And so tell us a little bit more about who you are. Do you work?
Yes, at the moment I've recently got a job just after the lockdown. Work full time at alcohol and drug rehab.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. How amazing. And tell us a little bit about, you know, your background, your childhood growing up.
Yes, I was born in the Netherlands, in small town Schiedam next to Rotterdam. And I don't really remember too much of my childhood. Mainly in the last few years I'm starting to sort of remember little things.
Right.
But I think since I started drinking at a young age, yeah, my childhood memories are sort of faded away quite a bit.
Sure. Mm. And so how long have you been here in New Zealand?
I've been here 23 years now.
Wonderful, wonderful. So tell us then about what it was like when you started drinking. Do you recall what age that was?
I think I used to drink shandy at birthday parties and, you know, probably from the age of 11 or 12. And the drinking age was back then 16 in Holland, so quite a lot lower than New Zealand. And I probably started drinking regularly since the age of 14 when I went to high school.
Mm. And were you around others that drank as well, so family, siblings?
Not so much. I mean, in Holland, it's quite a culture, like in most countries, that at birthday parties, all the adults are drinking. And, I grew up in a family where everyone would pretty much drink, all my aunties and uncles.
And what did it do for you?
Well, when I was younger and used to listen to them, sort of in between kit and growing up, I used to always hear them have lots of laughter and fun, the later it got, the more drinks they had and the dirty jokes came out. And it was always something about, sex or this or that, those kind of jokes I wasn't meant to listen to. Mm. And, it always kind of attracted me that, that's fun, drinking. And, then I got into it myself when I, went to high school, age of 13, 14, drinking became sort of a hobby of mine, I guess.
And so you're drinking at that age, was it, fairly social?
I wouldn't call it social. I think it was more antisocial. Like most people at school would sit in the lunchroom having their cheese sandwiches, and me and my mate would go to the pub on the corner and have a couple of beers for lunch, And it wasn't like heavily drinking. We didn't get drunk, but it was still, we didn't associate with sort of the normal people, boring people who go and have a beer,
And so how did it progress into your early adulthood?
It progressed pretty much when I emigrated to New Zealand. I came to New Zealand a first time in 1982. Mm-hmm. It was then that, big culture shock. Everything changed and didn't know anyone. Only places I went to was the pubs. And that often ended up in getting kicked out on a Friday night, because no ID or, I was too young. And, it progressed pretty quick that I drank quite a lot in those days. I was 16, 17. And the end result was, I got arrested, did some things and ended up in jail. So, my drinking
Escalated quickly.
Pretty quickly then,
And so tell us more about, some of the consequences of your drinking.
I think one of the consequences was that it sort of distanced myself from my family. Being a bit rebellious as a teenager, I think that's quite normal. But for me, it was different because my dad was a drinker himself, a daily drinker. And he also smoked. And then trying to tell his kids, don't drink, don't smoke, that didn't really work. I just carried on drinking. I ran away from home, I think the first time I was about 14 or something. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't allowed to smoke, those kind of things. And when I got to New Zealand, I think I stayed with my parents for about maybe 3 months and then I left home.
Right.
And because I met some friends and they were into drinking and smoking pot, and I thought that I was grown up enough to just go my own way and didn't get on with my dad. So.
Sure. And you talked about getting in trouble with the law. Jobs, any problems with keeping a job?
Initially, when I came to New Zealand, I started working and had lots of jobs. Back in the early 80s, there was plenty of jobs, 3 months here, 2 months there, and lots of work experience here and there. But I think because of my drinking, it did become a problem. I had one employer where I used to work on Saturdays and sell lots of stuff and put the money in my pocket instead of in the till. So I had more money to go out because the main thing I believe was that I was always really lonely and going to the pub, it felt like I had friends, and drinking and having fun. And I wanted to be like those other people, that seemed to have their life together. They looked like really cool when they were drinking. And so I lost a few jobs. And as I said earlier, I ended up in jail. That was a story where I was living on the North Shore. I ended up in Auckland City in Ponsonby at a party, and lots of booze, lots of drinking. And the people that took me there, because I was hitchhiking, they said, because I said, how am I going to get home? There's no buses. Oh, don't worry, we'll get you a ride. And I thought a ride is they're going to drive me home. But I ended up in a stolen car. They hotwired it, and I'd never even driven a car. Couldn't even get it into reverse. I stole it. Had to go back in the party. Can you please come back? So that was the first time I ever drove a car back to the North Shore. And yeah, I think hanging out at parties with people that drink, yeah, I often hung out, ended up with the wrong type of people that also did criminal stuff. And once I found out how easy it was to steal cars, I just let loose. Wow. I started traveling around New Zealand, pick up a car here, drop it off there, grab another one. And in those days, there was the driver's license with no ID. Most people had a checkbook in their glove box. A lot of people even left their keys in the car. And my attitude back then was, oh, it's not my fault. You leave your keys in the car, you know. I remember one particular car at a fish and chip shop in Orewa. The engine was still running. And I was hitchhiking up to Whangarei. And I thought, wow, you know, this is awesome. Thank you very much.
Perfect opportunity.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was pretty much an opportunist, you know.
And so at any point did you think this isn't normal, my behaviour or my drinking isn't normal?
No, I even those kind of things, my thinking was really warped, I think, because of the drinking and the people I hung out with. It was just normal because, yeah, it was no big deal stealing a car or riding out a false check. And I could see the progression in it, that it could have gotten a lot worse. And even after I went to jail, spent 6 months inside and come out, in those days there was no rehabilitation. And it never even occurred to me that I ended up in jail because of drinking. It was just I did stupid stuff, you know, so it's my own fault.
And so you didn't try at any point then to stop drinking?
No. When I got out of jail, my dad, mum and dad lived in Mission Bay, worked at a fish and chip shop, and dad was making his own home brew, quite strong beer. And as soon as I got out of jail, it was, yeah, just a
straight
few beers every
it.
Day. And I worked for a year with my parents, and yeah, drinking didn't seem to be the problem. Like, I've never been a really heavy drinker, apart from in the weekends. So it's sort of like I was still functioning most of the time.
Okay, and so at what point, you know, did you think this isn't normal? Or what was it that, you know, we talk about in AA coming, you know, to your rock bottom?
I think it took a long time for me because back then in 1986, I ended up going back to Holland and still in complete denial that, you know, alcohol isn't the problem. It's New Zealand and it's my dad and it's, you know, blaming the world for all my problems. And back in Holland in 86, I hooked up with old friends that were still around, obviously people that drink and do drugs. And my alcoholism kind of changed over, cross-addicted to drugs and gambling, and I did a bit of everything. And the thing is, I also most of my life worked, you know, which kept me functioning as well. So it took a long time for it to really hit me that I was an alcoholic. It's actually only 2009, 11 years ago, you know, it's taken that long. I ended up in a rehab in Rotterdam in 1995. But I went to that rehab because I was actually scared of getting addicted to drugs. You know, I was using certain drugs that, you know, can become real addictive. And, yeah, I was scared. But after 6 months in that rehab, it was a part-time rehab for working people, they said if alcohol wasn't your primary addiction, you could drink socially again.
Wow.
And I thought, great, you know. So even with the people from the rehab, you know, I was actually twice on Queen's birthday in Holland. We went out, party, have a few beers, but on both occasions, the few beers led me to leave the mates from rehab and go my own way. You know, and yeah, alcohol was a stepping stone, led me to go and do other stuff that wasn't healthy.
And okay, and so you know, after this rehab, what happened from there?
After the rehab, I think I did settle down, quiet down quite a bit. I had a partner. I had a full-time job and I played billiards pretty much every day, obsessively. Sure. Might have been slightly addictive too. But my life was pretty manageable at the time. Mm-hmm. But I was still searching for something. You know, I wasn't really happy at my job. I was only always working because I needed the money. Remember in the end of 95, 96, I wanted to be a nurse. But then I did a course through my job, and you had to do a presentation. And I made the presentation about New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And suddenly I started to think, and oh, my parents are getting older. I might never see them again. Pretty much my mum, you know, mainly. Then I just decided I'm going back to New Zealand. Wow. Just like that, you know. Then 6 months later, I was in Christchurch. Mm-hmm. So 1997, I arrived here, and pretty much history repeated itself because I lived with mum and dad for a while. And after, I think after weeks, you know, I just couldn't cope with my dad.
Sure.
I got a relationship, moved out, and I still remember my mate from rehab when I told him he was actually swearing to me in Dutch, you know, because I got a relationship with a woman who also had a tattoo of a cannabis leaf, and she drank and she smoked, and I thought she was the perfect woman.
Perfect. You know?
And that was, at the time, my longest relationship, 3.5 years. And, you know, I was working, had a full-time job, and we went to the pub. We drank and gambled. And yeah, it never still occurred to me that it was a problem.
Sure.
At that time.
And so what was it then that, you know, you say you've been sober now for nearly 11 years or over 11 years.
Mm.
What brought you into recovery, into AA?
In 2000, 20 years ago, I ended up gambling a lot more than I was drinking, mainly mm-hmm. because I became the manager at my job, had responsibilities, had to mm-hmm. be there early. And I also noticed that the drinking was just becoming more and more alcoholic drinking. Mm-hmm. You know, I started drinking wine, a bottle of wine, wake up in the middle of the night, can't sleep, drink another bit more. And eventually my gambling got me to my first rock bottom, mm-hmm. where I ended up in a sister fellowship, mm-hmm. Gamblers Anonymous. And 3 months in there, my sponsor at the time asked me about my drinking. And I thought, that's odd. Why are you asking me about my mm-hmm. drinking? This is about gambling. How do you know even that I drink? You know, I couldn't understand. But I was honest at the time. That's one thing I learned in 12-step mm-hmm. fellowships. I became honest. And I said, yeah, well, to be honest, I have started to go to the bottle store a bit more often mm-hmm. since I stopped gambling. And he suggested to come to AA.
And you went?
I went. And as GA worked to stop gambling, I went to AA to help me stop drinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to meetings, did some service. I had a sponsor. And yeah.
What was it like at your first AA meeting?
My first AA meeting.
Were the people welcoming?
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were very welcoming, sometimes even a bit overwhelming. But, yeah, no, they were nice. And there was a lot of old-timers, mostly men at the time. There's a lot more women in AA mm-hmm. now. And I knew that drinking was a problem. You know, I couldn't fully admit I was an alcoholic, but I knew it was a problem. And going to AA meetings, I didn't drink, and my life actually improved a lot.
Wow.
You know, yeah.
And you talked about service.
Yeah, I became a secretary for a meeting every Friday night and had to open the door.
Yeah.
And that was, I think it was for 6 months that I committed to. And this is a typical thing of my way of thinking. I've done my 6 months, that's it. You know, so it was kind of maybe, I think they call it budding, building up to drink. You know, mm-hmm. A whole lot of stuff happened in that period. I lost my job, had to get another job, relationship breakup, several other little relationships. I realized that without the drinking, there's still something mm-hmm. in me that needed filling, you know. I felt empty inside. And I remember it was like relationships or even sex, you know. I wanted something to make me feel good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happened then, the relationship breakup and changing jobs. A whole lot of things happened. I stopped going to AA, and then suddenly I thought that I'm not like those men in AA. I'm different, you know, because all they talk about is they pick up a drink and they can't stop.
Mm.
And I thought, no, that's not me. I was in denial, you know, because I could always stop because I had to go to work the next day, so I'd stop. But I didn't stay stopped, you know.
And so how did you get back into AA, into the rooms?
It took a long time. it very slowly progressed. It's a progressive disease. I started drinking a little bit. That's right. And it took another year. And yeah, I got a little bit back to front. Anyway, I stopped going to AA, started drinking a little bit, then had all the relationship issues and lost my job. And then I got another job where I was still the manager, but I had to be sort of hands-on, do physical work. And because I wasn't used to that anymore, started to get back problems, and the doctor prescribed me some painkillers.
Okay.
And those painkillers, I started to abuse them. And drinking wasn't really much of a problem then. But
So you cross addicted to something else.
Yeah.
And so how long did that go on for?
That progressed pretty quickly from the painkillers to street drugs intravenously, and it went on for some months. And I wanted an easy way out, a methadone program, which they wouldn't give me in Christchurch because I hadn't been on the drugs long enough. And I did another geographical. I went to Auckland, thought get a new job up there and start a new life. And eventually I did get on the methadone program and I did get the new job, and my life seemed great on the outside, you know. I had a good job, a partner, everything on the outside looked great, but on the inside I was still the same and still hurt and damaged. So
what did you do to bring you out of that and to bring you into recovery and sobriety today?
Again, what happened was, it was the day that I got arrested, 5th of July 2009, and I was... old would I've been 40 something, and I was standing and crying in front of the judge, you know, and he said to me too, he said, I'm not going to send you to jail because the way you're presenting here, I'm going to send you to a rehab. So that's how I ended up in a rehab for the first time, and I decided to move back to Christchurch and moved in with my mum, and I knew that AA worked, you know, and it was also part of my special condition, so I had to go to GA, I had to go to AA, and I had to go to NA and some other things, you know. And I did a hell of a lot of meetings then. I went to 2-3 meetings a day, all different fellowships. But the one that that rang through the most for me was the AA, because I heard the same stuff and I saw the same people that were there like 9 years earlier, and like people that were like 10 years sober, they were now 19 years sober. I thought, wow, it's amazing. And even today, those people are still around. So, I met those same old-timers and I started to listen to them, you know, hearing the similarities, not the differences. And I could finally admit that I was an alcoholic. It took a few months, but I could finally understand that when they talk about they pick up a drink and they can't stop and they black out, I was so in denial of that word blackout. But what I used to do with the drugs was the same thing. I wanted to black out, wanted to be away from this world.
And so you finally understood.
I understood, and also understood that, you know, I was an alcoholic, that there's many more people in AA that don't only use alcohol. You know, some of us cross-addict. But in the past, I wouldn't see that. I just saw AA as alcoholics and they only drink, and that's not me. You know, I don't operate like that. I thought I was smarter than everybody else. But,
So we talk about AA being a spiritual program, not a religious one. What does that look like for you?
It keeps changing over time. I mean, I have understood that, you know, you can come to believe in a higher power. And in my early recovery, I used to go to Teofino, which is a place next door to the bridge, and... I went to groups there every day. And for me, just those groups, you know, the power of the group or the power of AA meetings, the program was a higher power. Like, I couldn't stop drinking on my own. And, together we could do it. And
that's beautiful.
I just remembered, and even now, you know, all the preambles from AA, they're inside my head, you know. I can just about...
Yep. It's there.
Say
it's
them, there. You know, and it all starts to make sense now. You know, it's taken a long time, but now I've sort of internalized all that literature and the words, and also the higher power. I don't have to worry about what it is. I choose to call it God as well most of the time. And I heard one thing that applies most to me is good orderly direction. You know, it's in the literature. It's giving me some direction for my life, because listening to other people, which I've done my whole life, caused me to do stuff I shouldn't be doing.
Hey, well, Robert, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story.
Thank you.
It's been lovely to have you here. For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at www.aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 p.m. on Plains FM and repeats again on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download and subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with the Serenity Prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.